Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. A Deadly Deception. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
Ghost Town, we've talked through lots of outlandish military and spy operatives, but none might be as insane or honestly as successful as Operation Mincemeat, a British intelligence initiative that is, simply put, a kind of Weekend at Bernie's meets James Bond. Born from the mind of some high-ranking military officials, it truly helped change the course of World War II. And in doing so, employed some of the most ridiculous and in-depth measures known in counterintelligence history. Introducing Operation Mincemeat, a British deception operation you will not soon forget. Operation Mincemeat began soon after the start of World War II, on September 29, 1939 to be exact. On that day, the British Director of Naval Intelligence, Admiral John Godfrey, circulated a document that he had authored called the Trout Memo. In essence, it was a document that compared the deception of an enemy in wartime with fly fishing. Here's an excerpt. Quote, "The trout fisher casts patiently all day. He frequently changes his venue and his lures. If he has frightened a fish, he may give the water a rest for a half an hour, but his main endeavor is to attract fish by something he sends out from his boat, is incessant." The memo lists 54 ways that the enemy, like trout, may be fooled or lured. Number 28 on the list was titled, quote, "A suggestion, not a very nice one." It was an idea to plant misleading papers onto a corpse that would be found by an enemy. Quote, "A corpse dressed as an airman, with despatches in his pockets, could be dropped on the coast, supposedly from a parachute that had failed. I understand there is no difficulty in obtaining corpses at the Naval Hospital, but of course, it would have to be a fresh one." Now, I know these excerpts don't seem particularly titillating, mostly just like, again, Weekend at Bernie's in World War II, but compared to other military documents, it was a bit juicier and stranger than anticipated. Author Ben McIntyre observes that although the Trout Memo was published under Godfrey's name, it, quote, "bore all the hallmarks of Lieutenant Commander Ian Fleming, who was, at the time, drumroll, Godfrey's own personal assistant." If that name rings a bell to you, that's because Ian Fleming would eventually become the writer of some very famous spy novels, including the legendary James Bond series. Now, the deliberate planting of fake documents to be found by the enemy was not new. It had been done by the British and others in both world wars. For example, in August 1942, a corpse was placed in a blown-up scout car in a minefield facing the German 90th Light Division. On the corpse was a map that showed fake locations of British minefields. The Germans used the map, and their tanks were routed to areas of soft sand where they were trapped on the battlefield. Oddly enough, many British intelligence officers were on the same wavelength as Godfrey or Fleming, whoever you believe wrote the Trout Memo. Charles Cholmondeley outlined his own variation of the plan, codenamed Trojan Horse, maybe the most boring operation name at this point. In his plan, he explained, quote, "A body is obtained from one of the London hospitals. The lungs are filled with water and documents are disposed of in an inside pocket. The body is then dropped by a coastal command aircraft. On being found, the supposition in the enemy's mind may well be that one of our aircraft has either been shot or forced down and that this is one of their passengers." Cholmondeley was a flight lieutenant in the Royal Air Force who had been seconded to MI5, Britain's domestic counterintelligence and security service. He had also been appointed as the secretary of the 20 Committee, a small interdepartmental intelligence team in charge of finding double agents. In November 1942, the 20 Committee killed Cholmondeley's plan as being unworkable, but thought the idea may have some potential. As there was a naval component to Cholmondeley's plan, a naval representative named Ewan Montagu began working with Cholmondeley to develop the plan further. Montagu, oddly enough, worked under Godfrey at the Naval Intelligence Division, where he did counter-espionage work. So plans and minds were merging from Cholmondeley's brain to Godfrey or Fleming's. Still following me? Great. First things first, Montagu and Cholmondeley had to find a body, one that would fool the enemy into thinking it had died in combat. They learned that those who died in air crashes often did so from shock and not drowning. The lungs would not necessarily be filled with water, which gave Montagu and Cholmondeley more dead body options. Not only that, the enemy didn't often do autopsies, so they might not be looking into the body's cause of death further. Also a great thing. Montagu discussed the possibility of obtaining a corpse with Bentley Purchase, the coroner of the North District of London, and Purchase came through. On January 28, 1943, when he contacted Montagu with the news that he located a suitable body, a houseless person who had probably died from eating rat poison. Purchase informed Montagu and Cholmondeley that the small amount of poison in the system would not be identified in a body that was supposed to have been floating in the sea for several days. When Montagu commented that the undernourished corpse did not look like it fit a field officer, Purchase informed him that he, quote, does not have to look like an officer, only a staff officer, more used to office work. Purchase warned Montagu and Cholmondeley that the body had to be used within 3 months, after which it would be decomposed past the point of usefulness. Going back to the British troops, Montagu described the body's owner, not so respectfully, as a, quote, bit of a ne'er-do-well, and the only worthwhile thing that he ever did, he did after his death. Then Montagu selected the codename Mincemeat from a list of unused and approved codenames. Yes, that is it. And on February 4th, 1943, Montagu and Cholmondeley filed their plan for the operation with the 20 Committee, a plan to mislead the Germans into thinking the British were going to attack mainly against Sardinia and southern Greece. Then, the Mincemeat plan was to place the documents on the corpse and then float it off the coast of Spain, whose neutral government was known to cooperate with the Abwehr, the German military intelligence organization. The plan was passed by the committee, who passed it up the chain of command, and was quickly greenlit. Montagu and Cholmondeley began to create a, quote, legend, a fictitious background and character for their Operation Mincemeat body. The name and rank chosen was Captain William Martin of the Royal Marines. The name Martin was selected because there were several men with that name of approximately that rank in the Royal Marines. And, as a Royal Marine, Major Martin came under Admiralty authority, and it would be easy to ensure that all official inquiries and messages about his death would be routed to the Naval Intelligence Division. The rank of acting major also made him senior enough to be carrying sensitive documents, but not so prominent that anyone would recognize him. Additionally, Royal Marines wore a battle dress, which was easy to get and would fit the dead body well enough, at least. To reinforce the impression of Martin being a real person, Montagu and Cholmondeley provided corroborative details to be carried on his person, known in espionage circles as wallet or pocket litter. These included a photograph of a wind-blown, bikini-clad fake fiancé named Pam, modeled by a local clerk named Jean Leslie. Two love letters from Pam were included in the pocket litter, as was a receipt for a diamond engagement ring costing £53. Also in the pocket litter was a letter from Martin's fake father, described as a, quote, pompous and pedantic as only an Edwardian father could be. The letters were written in durable, waterproof ink in case anyone really wanted to dive deep into Major Martin's backstory. And if that wasn't enough, other items placed on Martin included a book of stamps, a silver cross and a St. Christopher's medallion, cigarettes, matches, and a pencil stub, keys, and a receipt for a new shirt. To provide a date that Martin had been in London, ticket stubs from a London theater and a bill for 4 nights lodging at the Naval and Military Club were added. along with other items placed on him, an itinerary of his activity in London could be constructed from the 18th to the 24th of April. Then there was the matter of Martin's ID, which also needed to be on his body. Montague and Cholmondeley tried to photograph the corpse for his ID, but Martin looked too much, well, like a dead body. So Montague and Cholmondeley conducted a search for people who resembled the corpse and found Captain Ronnie Reed, who agreed to be photographed for the identity card, wearing a Royal Marine uniform. As the three cards and passes needed to look not new for a long-serving officer, they were issued as recent replacements for lost originals. Montague spent the next few weeks rubbing all three cards on his pants to make them seem used and scuffed up. To provide an even more used look on the uniform, it was worn by Cholmondeley until it felt like an actual used uniform. So Operation Mincemeat had an objective: to fool the Germans. A body to put deceptive documents on, but no actual deceptive documents yet. More on what they planted on their brave cadaver and how it all turned out after this break.
Would you like to relax or fall asleep while learning about history? If so, then try my podcast, Calm History. You'll learn all about famous explorers, inventions, civilizations, ancient wonders, and even the Titanic. Just search your podcast player for Calm History or go to calmhistory.com.
In February 1943, intelligence officers Cholmondeley and Montague outlined three criteria for their falsified document to be put on Captain William Martin of the Royal Marines, aka a cadaver they got for Operation Mincemeat. They agreed that the target should be casually but clearly identified, that it should name Greece and another location as a cover, and that it should be an unofficial correspondence that would not normally be sent by diplomatic courier or encoded signal to seem even more super secret. The main document was a personal letter from Lieutenant General Sir Archibald Nye, the Vice Chief of the Imperial General Staff, who had a deep knowledge of ongoing military operations, to General Sir Harold Alexander, commander of the Anglo-American 18th Army Group in Algeria and Tunisia under General Eisenhower. Whew. After several attempts that sounded phony and strange, Cholmondeley and Montague had Nye draw up the letter himself. The letter covered several sensitive subjects, such as the unwanted award of Purple Heart medals, by U.S. forces to British servicemen serving with them, and the appointment of a new commander. The letter went on to identify Greece and Sardinia as targets for the assaults, along with justifications for their selections. There was also a letter of introduction for Martin from his commanding officer, Vice Admiral Lord Lewis Mountbatten, the Chief of Combined Operations. If that name sounds familiar, you know your British history. Lewis Mountbatten was uncle of Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh, the husband of Queen Elizabeth II. In the letter, Cholmondeley and Montague were maybe getting a little too clever for their own good, as it included a joke about sardines, which Montague was sure that the Germans would interpret as reference to an invasion of Sardinia. A single black eyelash was also placed on the letter to check if the Germans or Spanish had opened it. Cholmondeley and Montague were also slightly worried that the Spanish or Germans might have a possible, quote, Roman Catholic prejudice against tampering with corpses. So they added these official letters to a briefcase, which was attached to the corpse by a chain that ran down the sleeve of the cadaver to the suitcase. In April 1943, the Committee of the Chiefs of Staff gave Operation Mincemeat the green light, and then it was sent up the ladder to Winston Churchill, who read the details of Operation Mincemeat in bed, wearing a dressing gown and smoking a cigar. When warned the plan could go wrong, Churchill replied that, quote, "In that case, we shall have to get the body back and give it another swim." It was go time. In the early hours of April 17, 1943, the corpse was dressed as Martin, although there was one last-minute hitch. His feet were frozen. Purchase, Montague, and Cholmondeley could not put the boots on the cadaver, so an electric heater defrosted the feet enough to put the boots on properly. The pocket litter was placed on the body, and the briefcase was attached with the letters. The body was then placed in a canister, which was filled with 21 pounds of dry ice, sealed up, and placed on a boat deployed into the Mediterranean. On April 19th, the container was opened and the body was lowered into the water. The captain of the ship afterwards sent a message to Admiralty to say, quote, "Mincemeat completed." The body of Major Martin was found at around 9:30 a.m. on April 30th, 1943, by a local fisherman and taken to Spanish authorities, who sent messages to one another that were intercepted by the Germans and monitored by the British. The British knew that they were being intercepted. So how did the British know that the Germans were intercepting the signals? Well, they were encrypted, but the Germans had broken that code, and the British had broken that code. The messages played out the story that it was imperative that Germans retrieve the briefcase because it was important. Two Spanish doctors and one German one actually did do an autopsy on the body, signing a death certificate for Major William Martin for, quote, asphyxiation through immersion in the sea. The body was released by the Spanish and, as Major Martin, was buried in Nuestra Señora Cemetery in Spain with full military honors. The Germans took the briefcase and photographed the contents, the letters opened. The Germans deemed the information in the letters so important that they personally took the documents to Germany. On May 11th, the briefcase and documents were returned to the Spanish authorities and forwarded to London. On receipt, the documents were forensically examined, and the absence of the eyelash was duly noted. Further tests showed that the fibers in the paper had been damaged by folding more than once, which confirmed that the letters had been read. On May 14, 1943, Grand Admiral Karl Dönitz met with Hitler to discuss Dönitz's recent visit to Italy, his meeting with Mussolini, and the progress of the war. The admiral, referring to the mincemeat documents as the Anglo-Saxon Order, recorded, "The Führer does not agree with Mussolini that the most likely invasion point is Sicily. Furthermore, he believes that the discovered Anglo-Saxon Order confirms the assumption that the planned attacks will be directed mainly against Sardinia and the Peloponnesus, which is Greece." By the end of June, German troop strength on Sardinia had been doubled to 10,000, with fighter aircrafts also based there as support. German torpedo boats were moved from Sicily to the Greek islands, also in preparation. On July 9th, the Allies invaded Sicily in an operation called Operation Husky. German signals intercepted by GC and CS showed that even 4 hours after the invasion of Sicily began, 21 aircrafts left Sicily to reinforce Sardinia. At that point, Hitler was still convinced that an attack on the Balkans was imminent. By the time he realized the mistake, it was too late. On July 25, 1943, as the battle for Sicily went against the Axis forces, the Italian Grand Council of Fascism voted to limit the power of Mussolini. A new Italian government took power and began secret negotiations with the Allies. Sicily fell on August 17, 1943, thanks, in part, to Operation Mincemeat. The military historian Michael Howard described Mincemeat as, quote, "perhaps the most successful single deception operation of the entire war." Charles Cholmondeley would retire soon after Operation Mincemeat, keeping the detail of all of his operatives close to his chest. He remained secretive about his intelligence work for the rest of his life, attested his first wife, Allison, quote, "he would not give information to anyone who did not need to know. Infuriatingly, I found that this included me." Though Operation Mincemeat was not public knowledge, after a decade, Montague, the opposite of Cholmondeley, just couldn't help himself. Oddly enough, he is a cousin once removed of comedian Christopher Guest, so perhaps creativity and expression runs in his family. Over the course of a weekend, he wrote The Man Who Never Was, which sold 2 million copies and formed the basis for a 1956 film. The security services did not give Montague complete freedom to reveal Operation Mincemeat details, but in 1977, Montague published Beyond Top Secret U, his wartime autobiography, which gave further details of Mincemeat. Cholmondeley died on June 5, 1982. Montague wrote his obituary. Montague died on July 19, 1985. The secret details of Operation Mincemeat, nearly entirely, and finally, revealed.